Hello, one and all, and thank you for your listening ears. You found yet another episode of Catawampus Readings, the podcast where beginnings and introductions are divided and conquered as we take lessons and run away like maniacs laughing into the sunset. This is the third installment of our Fellowship of the Ring mini-series, and as we have covered both the prologue and the beginning of the first chapter already, we shall move on to character introductions. Today I wanted to take a look at Gandalf and Frodo, but when doing the reading for this week's episode, I realized that Frodo specifically doesn't have a single cohesive introduction scene. This is a problem, but then again, it's not actually a problem. See, a few months ago, we dug into villain introductions, and I mentioned in our episode on Matilda by Roald Dahl that the villain was mentioned early on in the story, but didn't actually interact with the main character until much later. This is a similar situation, where other characters talk about Frodo to give us a reference on his character before we're actually introduced to him. Luckily for us, Gandalf has a much easier introduction to parse, and since he comes first anyway, we'll start with him. As with Bilbo, Gandalf is a character that carries over from the previous book. So, let's take a look at his introduction and see if any external information is needed to better understand the information that we're given for his introduction. The Fellowship of the Ring by J.R.R. Tolkien. Gandalf's introduction. That very month was September, and as fine as you could ask. A day or two later, a rumor, probably started by the knowledgeable Sam, was spread about that there were going to be fireworks. Fireworks, what is more, such as had not been seen in the Shire for nigh on a century, not indeed since the old Took had died. Days passed, and the day drew nearer. An odd-looking wagon, laden with odd-looking packages, rolled into Hobbiton one evening and toiled up the hill to Bag End. The startled hobbits peered out of lamplit doors to gape at it. It was driven by outlandish folk singing strange songs, dwarves with long beards and deep hoods. A few of them remained at Bag End. At the end of the second week in September, a cart came in through Bywater from the direction of the Brandywine Bridge in broad daylight. An old man was driving it all alone. He wore a tall, pointed blue hat, a long gray cloak, and a silver scarf. He had a long white beard and bushy eyebrows that stuck out beyond the brim of his hat. Small hobbit children ran after the cart all through Hobbiton and right up the hill. It had a cargo of fireworks, as they rightly guessed. At Bilbo's front door, the old man began to unload. There were great bundles of fireworks of all sorts and shapes, each labeled with a large red G and the elf rune for his name. That was Gandalf's mark, of course, and the old man was Gandalf the Wizard, whose fame in the Shire was mainly due to his skill with fires, smokes, and lights. His real business was far more difficult and dangerous, but the Shire folk knew nothing about it. To them, he was just one of the attractions of the party, hence the excitement of the hobbit children. "Gee, for grand!" they shouted, and the old man smiled. They knew him by sight, though he only appeared in Hobbiton occasionally and never stopped long. But neither they nor any but the oldest of their elders had seen one of his firework displays. They now belonged to the legendary past. When the old man, helped by Bilbo and some dwarves, had finished unloading, Bilbo gave a few pennies away, but not a single squib or cracker was forthcoming, to the disappointment of the onlookers.
"Run away now," said Gandalf. "You will get plenty when the time comes."
Then he disappeared inside with Bilbo, and the door was shut. The young hobbits stared at the door in vain for a while, then made off, feeling that the day of the party would never come. Inside Bag End, Bilbo and Gandalf were sitting at the open window of a small room looking out west onto the garden. The late afternoon was bright and peaceful. The flowers glowed red and golden, snapdragons and sunflowers and nasturtiums trailing all over the turf walls and peeping up into the round windows.
"How bright your garden looks," said Gandalf.
"Yes," said Bilbo, "I am very fond of it indeed, and of all the dear old Shire. But I think I need a holiday."
"You mean to go on with your plan, then?"
"I do. I made up my mind months ago, and I haven't changed it."
"Very well. It is no good saying any more. Stick with your plan. Your whole plan, mind. And I hope it will turn out for the best. For you, and for all of us.
I hope so. Anyway, I mean to enjoy myself on Thursday and have my little joke.
Who will laugh, I wonder? Said Gandalf, shaking his head.
We shall see, said Bilbo.
Of the characters introduced so far, Gandalf is the only one that's gotten a physical description. And I think at some point I should probably talk about whether or not a physical description is important, because that's a really interesting talk, but that's a talk for another time. At any rate, this introduction is different in tone and flavor than what we got in the prologue, which was academic, and the beginning of the chapter featured exposition from the community's perspective. This follows in the same vein, introducing Gandalf as a part of the party preparations rather than as an individual with motivations and history beyond the situation. And that, I think, is accurate to how the hobbits perceive him. As mentioned, his real job is much more than entertainment, but they're not aware of it. You know, even if they were, I don't think they'd think about it very much. With that distant perspective from the community, we get to see the preparations of the party itself, and Bilbo's speech. It's not until Bilbo is leaving that we zoom in a little and see the interaction between him and Gandalf as famously portrayed at the beginning of Peter Jackson's movie. And it's from that closer perspective, after Bilbo has left, that we see Frodo step into his place as the central character. Let me show you what I mean.
Take care. I don't care. And don't you worry about me. I am as happy now as I have ever been, and that is saying a great deal. But the time is come. I am being swept off my feet at last.
He added, and then, in a low voice, as if to himself, he sang softly in the dark.
The road goes ever on and on, down from the door where it began. Now far ahead the road has gone, and I must follow if I can.
He paused, silent for a moment. Then, without another word, he turned away from the lights and voices in the fields and tents, and followed by his three companions, he went around into his garden and trotted down the long sloping path. He jumped over a low place in the hedge at the bottom and took to the meadows, passing into the night like a rustle of wind in the grass. Gandalf remained for a while, staring after him into the darkness.
"Goodbye, my dear Bilbo. Until our next meeting," he said softly, and went back indoors.
Frodo came in soon afterwards and found him sitting in the dark, deep in thought. "Is he gone?" he asked.
"Yes," answered Gandalf. "He has gone at last."
I'd hoped until this evening that it was only a joke," said Frodo. "But I knew in my heart that he really meant to go. He always used to joke about serious things. I wish I had come back sooner, just to see him off."
"I think he really preferred slipping off quietly in the end," said Gandalf. "Don't be too troubled. He'll be all right now. He left a packet for you. There it is."
Frodo took the envelope from the mantelpiece, glancing at it, but did not open it.
"You'll find his will and all of the documents in there, I think," said the wizard. "You are the master of Bag End now, and also, I fancy, you'll find a golden ring."
"The ring!" exclaimed Frodo. "Has he left me that? I wonder why. Still, it may be useful."
"It may, and it may not," said Gandalf. "I should not make use of it if I were you. But keep it secret. Keep it safe. I am going to bed."
This is the first time we get to see Frodo on screen, as it were, and interacting with other characters. It's really interesting that the passing of the ring has served as a symbol for how the author is handling the centrality of the characters. Now that Bilbo is no longer holding onto the ring, he's going to fade out of the narrative. He'll reappear briefly later on in the book, but he's no longer in the middle of everything. He is not the main character anymore, because he let his heir take on that mantle. But as you probably noticed, Frodo doesn't really have a lot of personality here. There's a hint of it, but he's not nearly as flavorful as the Gaffer or Bilbo. The next time we see him interacting with someone, it's in this short little scene with the Sackville Bagginses, during which Frodo is never actually seen speaking with them. We're starting to run out of time, but I want to get this last little bit done, and then we'll wrap up. Here we go. In the middle of the commotion, the Sackville Bagginses arrived. Frodo had retired for a while and left his friend Mary Brandybuck to keep an eye on things. When Otho loudly demanded to see Frodo, Mary bowed politely. "He is indisposed," he said. "He is resting." "Hiding, you mean," said Lobelia. "Anyway, we want to see him, and we mean to see him. You just go and tell him so." Mary left them a long while in the hall, and they had time to discover their parting gift of spoons. It did not improve their tempers. Eventually, they were shown into the study. Frodo was sitting at the table with a lot of papers in front of him. He looked indisposed, to see the Sackville Bagginses at any rate, and he stood up, fidgeting with something in his pocket, but he spoke quite politely. The Sackville Bagginses were rather offensive. They began by offering him bad bargain prices, as between friends, for various valuable and unlabeled things. When Frodo replied that only the things specially directed by Bilbo were being given away, they said the whole affair was very fishy. "One thing is clear to me," said Otho, "and that is that you are doing exceedingly well out of it. I insist on seeing the will." Otho would have been Bilbo's heir but for the adoption of Frodo. He read out the will carefully and snorted. It was, unfortunately, very clear and correct according to the legal customs of hobbits, which demanded, among other things, 7 signatures of witnesses in red ink. "Foiled again," he said to his wife, "and after waiting 60 years, spoons, fiddlesticks." He snapped his fingers under Frodo's nose and stumped off. But Lobelia was not so easily got rid of. A little later, Frodo came out of the study to see how things were going on, and found her still about the place, investigating nooks and corners and tapping floors. He escorted her firmly off the premises, after he had relieved her of several small but rather valuable articles that had somehow fallen inside her umbrella. Her face looked as if she was in the throes of thinking out some really crushing parting remark, but all she found to say, turning around on the step, was, "You'll live to regret it, young fellow. Why didn't you go too? You don't belong here, you're no Baggins, you're a Brandybuck." "Did you hear that, Mary? That was an insult, if you like," said Frodo as he shut the door on her. "That was a compliment," said Mary Brandybuck, and so, of course, not true. In this section, we get a better feel for who Frodo is as a person, even though we don't hear his voice through most of it. In the beginning, we see the stage set for us by the gaffer, introducing Frodo as a good lad and a gentle hobbit, and here we get to see Frodo living up to that reputation. This lends weight to what other people say about Frodo and also highlights key traits so we can easily identify the qualities that the author wants us to admire in the main character. Alright, that's all we have time for this week. We'll come back next week with some more character introductions, this time skipping ahead to our first glimpse of Strider, and diving into how his character is handled in those first few scenes. The random question of the day is, you can bring one animal from the world of Middle-earth to your home. Which animal would it be, and why? Until next time, keep yourselves and your friends out of trouble, my Inklings. This has been your host, Inkfire, and you have been a most admirable audience. I'll see you on the other side. Thank you for listening to Catawampus Readings. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. If you're interested in supporting Catawampus Readings and would like early access to new episodes, you can sign up to donate monthly at patreon.com/inkfire. Special thanks to our patrons, Corvus, Valkyrie, and Barry Marie.